Hi everyone, and welcome to the Untitled Car Show. My name is Ike. And so I went to Opposite Lock a little earlier today and said, you know, I'm feeling uninspired, but I got to get an episode out for Friday. So the way I got re-inspired is I asked Opposite Lock for questions, and then I worked on the Volvo for a bit. So we'll talk about that in just a bit. But I kind of want to go down with, you know, all the replies and everything and all the questions we got here. Let me see. Gonna go through. I apologize if this comes through weirdly. Yoon Cleavinus with a 2.5 liter inside. Asked me, you know, talk about the Volvo engine swap progress or have a show about the best affordable and rational engine swaps. So that second bit, I think I'm going to try and get a crate engine supplier onto the show. So in terms of rational engine swaps, I mean, the LS1 is, you know, the one for the reason. It makes the most sense. It's the easiest to do. You might as well bite the bullet if you want V8 power, just put an LS in there. And you don't have to be, you know, like, guy dude bro about it and be like, well, you know, it's got an LS in it and blah, blah, blah. You can put it in there and do it for the right reasons. You know, you want power and you want it in a good package. There's not a lot else that's really super easy to throw into anything. I wish there was more. The Nissan motor I have, which came out of either a Mercury Villager or a Nissan Quest, both are minivans, has the intake manifold facing the wrong way around. So I was playing around with the manifold this evening, trying to get it to face the right way. And there's no way to get it to go the way it needs to, without raising it up or causing a bunch of other serious issues. It just won't fit with where the distributor is, because the distributor, when you're looking at the motor, is on the right-hand side, and so was the throttle body. So when you... Yeah, so it was weird. So, like, the throttle body was on the right-hand side, which meant that the remainder of the intake manifold runner was on the left side of the center line, I guess. So when you take it around, flip it around, and put it back on top, it bumps up against the intake manifold, and it just doesn't work. So left with a couple options with that. So where the motor is now, it's sitting in the engine bay. My intention is to, it's in the bay, it's not jacked up or anything, it's literally sitting on a couple of Harbor Freight dollies. So my intention was, I got the old bell housing, I got the old alternator, got all the parts and pieces I need, was going to be to get this thing wired up, hook up the fuel, the plumbing to it, the air, everything it needs, and then see if it runs. Because if it does run, then it's just a matter of getting it jacked up in place, getting the motor mounts on it, and reconnecting everything once again. If it doesn't run, that means we got to tear down the motor and figure out why it's not running. So we're kind of going to, you know, we're working on that aspect of it. So hoping it runs, because it came out of a reliable car, it was used in a Lemons race as a Lemons racer. So that's the hope of it. Yeah, it's a little weird. I'm kind of taking apart some of the plumbing and everything that the previous Lemons, you know, racer had for it. It's an interesting, situation to be in. So if it doesn't run, options are, you know, troubleshoot it for a while. And then I've been looking at maybe going to a carbureted motor setup just to kind of alleviate as much wiring as possible. Because right now, all the wiring in the vehicle, it's just a hodgepodge. It's messy. It's not really the look I wanted for the vehicle. But if it works, fuel injection and all that is better to have than a carbureted setup. But it is more things that can go wrong. So, I don't know. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other about all that could go wrong in this. So if I need to take the motor to carbureted, it's going to be a matter of, you know, get a new intake manifold, put it together, hook up the carburetor to it. That's going to be a lot of, having a brain fart at just the wrong time. A lot of fabrication work that I need to do. That also requires a new distributor. That requires getting a new carburetor. It requires a lot of new bits and pieces that I really don't want to have to buy for the vehicle, since this is such a low budget project. So for those of you who are new listeners to the show, this is the Volvo that ran into 24 Hours of Le Mans Road Rally. It broke down into the race. Probably late day two is when it really broke down permanently. So the goal in project was always to do an engine swap into this thing and get it, you know, working and running the way I wanted it to. The issue I'm having is just a lot of little... So I already said what the issue is. So the motor came from a Le Mans racer close by. He goes by the Mad Russian, I think, is kind of what he's known for on the Le Mans forum. He was kind enough to give me this motor, get all the parts and pieces I needed, all the wiring harness, and get it to me. And then the transmission, so that was $100. So the car basically cost me $700 new to buy, or new to me to buy. Motor was $100. Transmission was from a Nissan 300, and that cost me $60 to get. So all told, I'm in the vehicle, you know, less than $1,000 in terms of overall parts that are sitting in it right now. Tires, wheels, some oil changes, everything in there, call it $1,000. That's kind of where I want to keep it. So I'm contemplating at the moment, you know, what exactly I want to do, because the family's in town and all that this week, so I don't know, I have some time to tinker around and just think about things. I don't know, the more I'm sitting here and the more I'm thinking about it, the more I like the idea of carbureted setup, just because it's less things to go wrong, and it would require me getting a fuel pressure regulator, which isn't a big deal, would make my job a little easier in terms of hooking up everything and all that. I don't know, it's such a... I'm not sure what I would lose electronically in this situation that I really want to keep, so meh. I don't know, but it does blow the budget out of the water. So there's that. Yeah, I don't know. It's because right now it's a million wires. It's a million places. When you get a motor like this and you get all the wiring, which he was nice enough to give me, it is a spaghetti mess. And it's basically just a matter of finding which connector goes with what, hooking it back in, getting everything sorted out. It's not a huge issue, right? There is a loom that was cut in half, which fine. You know, he got the motor to me. I don't know. I'm just such... Because if I do get the carburetor, then I got to figure out, you know, I got to get the fuel pressure sender. It's just such a big mess. So stick to the original plan, Ike. Don't get deviated. Go get the intake manifold from a different Nissan. That's pretty what I'm going to do. I'll do my research in case it comes to plan B, which would be the carburetor setup. Because carbs aren't cheap. So, I don't know. We'll see where this all goes to. Yeah, so that's where that's at the moment. The interior's been stripped. It's all good on the inside. It's just a matter of, once the motor's installed, we got the new, once we get the clutch on it, once we get the transmission hooked up to it, we'll need a new rear shaft. So there's the shaft that goes from the transmission back to the coupling, and the one that goes from the coupling down to the rear differential has been severed because of the Lemons rally. So I need to get a new one of those. I'm gonna rebuild the rear differential. That's in the project plan. Not rebuild so much as just kind of refurbish, I guess is a better way to put it. So just kind of get that back into a working condition. Hoping to keep the power steering, not a big loss if I don't. I got the power steering pump from the Nissan. Hopefully it'll work with the Volvo rack. I don't know. See, it's when it comes down to all that stuff where it starts getting, hinky as to what we're going to do, what we're going to keep, what we're not going to keep, and all that. So, I don't know. We'll see. The more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm kind of going, just carburetor might not be the worst, might be a better idea in the long run just for pure reliability, but that requires a lot of fab on my end, and I don't know if that's the wisest thing. Also, price. Anyway, so, yeah, that's where we're at with the project. So, engine is what we're working on, concentrating on. Once the engine's up and running, then we're going to get, the fab that needs to happen in the engine bay done. Basically, just motor mounts and getting the suspension, everything back in place. We're working on putting some new brakes onto the car, upgrading those on the cheap. The kind of goal is to have a great car for less than roughly $2,000. My weekly budget for the vehicle has basically been under $50. So, in terms of project investment and everything, I know that might seem like a lot to some people, might not seem like a lot to a lot of other people. If you think about it, that's tools, that's equipment, that's everything I'm getting for this vehicle. So, it might even be less than that, but it's just kind of if I need a part, if I need equipment. It's been scouring for places, it's been doing all the research, it's been get the best part for the cheapest amount. So that's kind of where we've been at with that. So yeah, that's I think I went on that for a little bit. I want to jump to someone, let me see here. My X-Type is two-wheel Jaguar wants to talk me to talk about Gumball Rally. It's the LA River race between the he this is the other part he's showing a clip and me to get to talk about it. I remember seeing this once as a kid. I do need to watch it again. And I think what I'm gonna do is me and the daughter are gonna have a daddy daughter movie night where we're gonna watch some old goofy 60 movies that are basically harmless, and that's on the list. If that's a bad idea, let me know. EL Yuli. Wants to know. He has some great questions here. So, let me see here. His question topic for the show is the best car of its class. Is it important? A lot of enthusiasts will dog on another car's choice because in its segment, car A is better than segment B, or better than car B. So, what's right? If the person wants a C-Class IS350 over 320 AI/A4, who cares? Question mark. I think automotive sites and magazines need to stop having these head-to-head comparisons to see which of the same flipping type of car is best. I don't see the point of dull conversations of this besides dull conversations by cars and coffee zombies. It's so here's the way I look at it. Best in class, the comparisons to guys who read the motor trend, who, because I have one of these, I'm around occasionally, and he drives me nuts. Because when I had the Challengers, he would be like, well, your Challengers are great, but you should have got a, a Mustang, because the Mustang has a better, you know, 0-60 time, and it's got better handling, and da-da-da-da. And then I got out of the Challengers, and I got into my Volvo, and, you know, he was giving me some crap about that, like, well, why you got a Volvo, because this was the V7, or the C30 initially, like, well, why'd you get the C30, you should have got a Focus, blah, 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 blah. And now he's in thinking about getting a Demon, which I think is hilarious, given all the crap he gave me about the Challenger. Here's the way I look at it. When you sit down and you break down any car down to its base elements, it's kind of like rating a painting based on what type of paint they used. Well, you know, this quality of oil paint used on this Rembrandt is better than that Picasso, because his quality of oil paint was slightly less. Or this one's better because it's got, you know, a larger mastic on the side, or has a larger frame, or has a larger surface area. Or this food is the best food because it comes to you in this amount of time, or they give you this amount, or whatever. It's always fun to do. I come from my background, and a lot of this is, I like to do a lot of ribbing. I like to, you know, make fun of, you know, show the stereotypes. If someone bought a car, you know, I always give them a slightly hard time. It doesn't matter what it is, just because that's my nature. So, but I really, when it comes down to it, like, a coworker got a new car. He's a very eccentric individual, but he always buys very boring cars. So I always give him a hard time about that, of like, your car does not match your personality at all, but at the end of the day, what you're into is what you're into, and, you know, you're not into cars, so it doesn't make sense for you to buy a, you know, old rat rod to match your personality or whatever, because you're going to hate life in that vehicle. So, I don't know, it's, if you are going to give someone a hard time in a playful way, fine. Best in class, that's perfectly acceptable. If you're a auto manufacturer and you're giving one of those stupid best in class awards and you're putting it in your commercials and everything, it really doesn't mean much. Like, to the consumer, you know, I think you hear best in class and you just zone it out now, because it means next to nothing, because they narrow those things down so effing much that, you know, you have, this is its best in class. Its class is a V8, twin turbocharged, full-size SUVs with the third row, with rear-wheel drive only. It's like, you've just narrowed that down to where there's only one car in that class. It, like, best-in-class towing power, it, all that stuff is so, is just marketing mumble-jumbo. It means next to nothing. It, like, I own a Ford Fiesta. My Ford Fiesta ST is great at a ton of shit, and that's why I bought it. I think it looks good. I think it handles well. It's got decent power. Is it better than a Fiat 500 to Barth? Yes and no. A Barth is good at other shit and worse at some shit. So, I think a Barth is a more, you know, a quirky car. It's a more fun place to be on a moment-by-moment basis. But a Fiesta is a better car in terms of handling and in terms of probably reliability, crash test, and comfort, and space on the inside. But, excuse me, really, when I see in a Barth, or, you know, and I talk to the guy, we both wanted similar things out of the cars, but at the end of the day, you know, there's a reason why he went with that and I went with this. The dick measuring that really doesn't make sense is when you're an enthusiast of a specific type of vehicle and you give everyone else crap about not liking your type of vehicle. I don't know. It's like if you can't hang out with Mustang guys because you're a Camaro guy, you're missing out on so much fun and camaraderie that, like, why are you limiting yourself to this? Like, again, another friend, he was going through a hard time in his life, not to give out his personal stuff, going through a hard time in his life. So he went from a big car downsized to a smaller car. And he asked me for my advice, and I gave him my list. And he said, well, I can't buy a Ford because my family will disown me because they're like Dale Earnhardt Jr. fans or something like that, some NASCAR thing. And it's like, okay, I understand that there is a loyalty there, but everything you're asking me about my advice to you is to go get the Ford Focus with the manual transmission, blah, blah, blah. And then he went out and got a Dart, and the Dart was awful and recalled and lemoned. And it was like, yeah, that's what happens. You just got to, and he ended up in another terrible car because at that point he just stopped asking me for advice and whatever. You got to appreciate other people, especially best in class. Well, what the fuck does it mean anymore? It means nothing. Like, what is the God's honest difference between a Camaro and a Mustang right now? Next to nothing. I mean, I'm sure one has slightly more horsepower than the other one in the V8 model, and one's probably slightly better braking distance, and one's probably slightly better. There's no difference. They're the same vehicle. They just look different. It's whichever one you think looks better, or whichever one you think is more comfortable, or whichever one you like the inside of better. That's all that is anymore. Yeah, there are some cars out there that are terrible. Yeah, of course. But who gives it? Like, no enthusiast is probably driving one of those. And if they are, they're driving it because they enjoy it and they probably understand the terribleness of the vehicle. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. And, like, I don't know. It's a weird thing because I've definitely gone through some phases on this myself. Because back in the day, used to not like anything that wasn't the brand I was driving. And now I find myself like appreciating all the makes and models out there when I see them. And it's almost like when I was growing up, I was a very picky eater as a child. And as I get older and get wiser, I guess, you can tell me we're going to go have any ethnic food on the planet, and it doesn't matter to me, I will tag right along. There are still, don't get me wrong, there's still some things I won't eat, fish being a big one. I just like something about it, just gaggy. Which, if you like fish, that's fine, I don't give a crap. It's just my weird sense of taste. So, but as I got older, it's like, yeah, why not? I'll try everything once, you know, maybe twice if I like it. Just to make sure it fits, I guess. But the, like, automotive world was the same way. Like, it used to be, oh, you're not driving Challenger, it's not good. You got to get into this because it's the best one, blah, blah, blah. Then I got to Volvo, and then I got another Volvo, and then I got a Ford and another Volvo, and it's like, yeah, it's good cars, but I'll drive a Camaro. I'll drive Fiat 500s. I'll drive whatever. They're all enjoyable to be in. And when you kind of limit yourself to that, and you limit that understanding of who you are as an enthusiast and what that means to you as a person, it's kind of sad. And it's, yeah, is there a, I don't know. there's a place for stats and there's a place for power and there's a place for the dick measuring and all that. But at the end of the day, if you're really all about, well, my car is the best in class, or my car is got 8 extra horsepower over the competition, like, go, so what? It doesn't matter. Personally, I don't know. In terms of, you know, having the head-to-head comparisons in the magazines, yeah, I guess, I don't know. I do think there is a place for that out there. I know that's kind of a little counterintuitive what I was saying. You have to write a story. I mean, if we want car journalism to survive, you have to have a tale to tell. I don't like when it's just skid pan and, you know, data analysis. Top Gear magazine did a great thing. Like if they went out and they did a battle of the hot hatchbacks, which they did a couple years ago, back when I was still subscribed to the magazine. I think the Fiesta ST just came out. And they had, excuse me again, sorry. And they had all these different hot hatchbacks. And what they did is they went out and they did a series of just driving roads, no challenges, no nothing. They just put the journalists, like, I think there was 12 cars, and for 12 days they just drove 12 different winding roads all through Europe. And each little journalist, like, each day wrote a little paragraph on the car they drove. And then at the end of that, there was a, like, page of this person, you know, this journalist picks this car for their, like, it was 12 journalists, 12 cars, 12 days, something like that. So this journalist at the end of the trip picked their opinion on the best car. And then at the end, they had to summarize, you know, like, there was, you know, this many votes for this car, there was, like, this many votes for this car, and this many votes for this car, and that's your first, second, and third. But it wasn't, this car is the best because it's got the best data points, or it's got the fastest, you know, fastest to 60, and it wins on a purely objective criteria. It was purely subjective. So it was the journalist kind of saying, this is the best car, here's why I think it's the best car, and that's my thought and opinion, and good luck with that. Which is great. I think that is the way you do that. I think automotive enthusiasm is done through a, it's a feeling and a thought and a way to experience the world, and that can't be summarized by data points. So I think if you're going to have that, it's like, well, this is the best in class in Fiesta, but it's not, or in the hot hatchbacks, it's his best in class subjectively, because it all is subjective. I think you need to have a way to compare vehicles, because that's how, you know, journalism in the automotive world is done. People want to know, you know, because at the end of the day, most people are doing car shopping, and they need to know this vehicle is, you know, however many thousands of dollars. I need to know if it's the best one at this particular criteria I'm looking at. And when it comes to that, like, when it comes just to that pure driven data point, like, this one has the best in-class interior cargo room, and that's what you need, then that's fine. Go out, buy that. But when it comes down to the way most people buy vehicles, they really don't know what they want. They just kind of go out and kind of read the consumer reports and kind of do a little bit of research and kind of go with what their gut tells them. And when it comes to that, they're really needs to be more effort and emphasis in the journalistic department, I think, in making people aware that this is the best vehicle in this class, in my opinion, as an enthusiast, or as a journalist, or as a mom, or as a dad, or as a lumberjack. There needs to be a, I don't know, an asterisk next to all of it. I don't know. I don't like it at Cars and Coffee Meets. I don't like it in the enthusiast world. I get it on a very fundamental point when you're doing research on vehicles. There needs to be data points. And like, best-in-class reliability. Well, how's that really rated? And does that really apply to this car? I don't know. It's such a... Like we need to stop giving a crap about it. Now, horsepower numbers have a place. You know, that is the reason why I didn't buy a BRZ. I would have gone with a Mustang, but I didn't want a Mustang because I wanted a V8 if I was going to get a Mustang. And if I was going to get something like that, I might as well get a Fiesta ST. And that, like, takes you weird places. Like, there's that aspect of it. I don't know. I think if you have an enthusiast, or if you have someone showing off their car and they're just dripping with data when they're doing it, you're a bit of a douche. I get it if it's a new car and you're going, this is my, 2017, Volvo V70 or V60R. It's got, 400 horsepower, 400 pound feet of torque, whatever it is. It's all-wheel drive, ba-da-da-da. Because if people don't understand what the car is, it helps to do that. But if you're like, oh, it's got best-in-class power and performance, it's like, what does that mean? So I don't know. I know I really didn't answer that question, so you're welcome. there's that. Because I do have a lot of thoughts on it. I don't know. I'm getting away from wanting to talk about data sets and more about what a car is and what it means and what it should mean to you if you're thinking about getting it, and kind of, I don't know, like, is this car true to itself? Is this basically the most important thing to me? Like, I like the Mirage because the Mirage understands exactly what it is and is not lying to you about what it is. Let's see here. There was another good question. I'm sorry if this sounds weird on the phone. We got Miss Mercedes, TriJet airline fangirl. The state of city cars in America 2017. I find it interesting to see that out of the few city cars that are in America, there are either completely foreign, the Smart, the IQ, which I don't even think they make anymore, the 500, or they're cars that have been developed with a global partner, or in Fiat Chrysler's case, just giving up and nuking everything from orbit. So I was going to do some research, but I said, F it. City cars, basically Smart Car, which is a delight. I'm going to call, like, the Mirage, the Fiesta, they're basically city cars. I mean, anything in kind of that, like, super, I don't know. I mean, they're not really. I guess the Mirage is right on the cusp of it. But you do have the 500, you have the Smart Car, and you really don't have much else besides those two in terms of pure small cars in the United States. And like, really, that kind of died out, as far as I'm aware, overseas too. You're getting seen a lot more little electric things driving around. I don't know, it's interesting. Gas is cheap, which is causing that not to be a thing. Now, if you start drawing in, like, the Fiesta, the Cruze, or whatever the small Chevy is, I mean, really, those two are the only other really small cars out there at the moment. And they're kind of just a step above the 500 and the Smart Car. Like, the Smart Car, it's probably the Smart Car is the smallest car. 500's next. Fiesta, in terms of footprint, and hatchback is next. And then the Cruze hatchback, or whatever their small car is. I forget exactly what it is. But Mercedes doesn't have anything that small in the U.S. Well, I guess they have the Smart Car, technically. BMW doesn't have a small car. I mean, the i3, that's Ford, or that's Focus-sized. It's a shame, though, because, you know, commuting in and out of the city in the Fiesta is fantastic. One of my favorite things about it is being able to squeeze into tight spots. I did have a guy yesterday to, like, try and yell at me, which I enjoy the sound glass in the car. He's trying to turn left. Traffic is coming at him. I am turning right, and I squeeze between him and the sidewalk. And, like, it's close to the point where I'm like, do I need to collapse in my mirror? And I'm like, no, I don't need to collapse in my mirror. I'm just moving slowly. And he turns from paying attention to the left turn he should be making to yell at me about trying to get around him because he's blocking traffic. Mind you, he hasn't pulled into the intersection or anything. He just decided that's how he's going to exist. So just being able to get around people like that is a godsend. Being able to park, being able to maneuver is... I mean, until you drive a really small car, especially coming from, you know, Challenger, giant Volvo wagon, down to the C30, but the C30 wasn't really that small. And then going from those vehicles down to a Fiesta, you really do appreciate being tiny and what that really can do for you in a city, which is why I really want a smart car to drive in DC, but Smart doesn't give out press loaners, which is very disappointing. I don't know, it's such an interesting little vehicle. I mean, you got the Mirage. So you got the Mirage, you got the Fiesta, the Cruze, or whatever it is. The 500. I guess you have the Versa Note is kind of in that mix too. Kia really doesn't make anything small enough to qualify. Honda, Hyundai, Toyota. Trying to think. Toyota, they have the little Yaris, I think. That works. I mean, the city car is kind of dead in development at the moment because we're living in Trump's America. And because of that, there's a lot of economic uncertainty. Listening to the report earlier today. But more than that, it's, you know, if you're going to be building small vehicles, they have small margins, which means importing them. Which means if you're going to import them, you're going to possibly have to pay some tariff on them coming into the U.S. Soon. And if there's even the possibility of that, you're going to have companies not wanting to pour R&D into a vehicle with small enough margins as is already. So you're not going to see a lot of development in those unless it's a partner overseas. So there's that aspect to it. It is a shame. I do wish we got better versions of these vehicles. The Cruze, or whatever the tiny fucking Chevy is, needs a hot version of that. You know, it would be fun to have a Nissan Versa Note that had a turbocharger slapped onto it. A Yaris with the turbo on it would be great. A Mirage with the turbo on it would be fantastic. Briefly talking with the Mitsubishi guy at the auto show, to kind of summarize, is The Mirage is a fantastic car for what it is. But why in this day and age with everything going on with Mitsubishi would you put more money into that vehicle than you have to? Because you're not going to entice the enthusiast over to the Mirage. They've already written it off. And you're not going to, sell a turbocharged version of that car to someone who wants to get that car. You're buying that car because it's the cheapest new car you can get, and it's got a fantastic warranty. So that's kind of where they ended up with that. There's that aspect of to it. It's fun, but I think city cars need to get more love. I don't like that Smart's going to all electric. What's ironic is years ago I called that. I went, they need to go to electric vehicles, otherwise they're going to be completely pointless. But the new Smart car is a fun, and it's, if you're an enthusiast, you need to do yourself a favor. Go find a new Smart car with a manual transmission in it and enjoy driving a super small city car. Even with the automatic, it shouldn't be as fun as it is to be in. I do think, there's talk of gas prices going up 20% this year. When gas prices go up, small car sales go up, which might see more R&D development thrown into these things. But I don't know, Americans in particular are fairly short-sighted about stuff like that. Because when gas was $4 a gallon, small car sales were up, big car sale was down. Now the gas is down sub, $3 around here, basically $2 a gallon for the non-premium stuff. And people are really, they're going out, they're buying SUVs, they're buying the full-size stuff, they're buying crossovers, they're buying whatever. And small cars aren't on the docket, and it's depressing me because I like small cars. But I do think, we'll see that turnaround eventually. The small cars and the wagons will be in vogue again soon enough, is my hope. So, and when they do, all the enthusiasts will be all about the SUVs and all that BS, because that's just how it's going to work. Let me see here. What else do I need to ramble on about? The Honda Bro wants to know my thoughts on the Volvo, where you can hear more. And I said, Volvo's great. That's my thoughts on it. It's interesting. I don't know. He asked if there was ever a guest who spent the whole time on a toilet. No, but Mr. Regular was on it for about half. I thought there was a couple more questions I wanted to get into. And the cross-country movie, got that one. Got Yuli's. I think that's it in terms of questions for this evening. So, yeah, that was it for the evening with the question. I don't know. Curious on everyone's thoughts about going to the carbureted route with the Volvo or sticking around with trying to get the wiring harness hooked up. I think I'm just flustered because it's like 2:00 in the morning at the moment. So, give me your thoughts. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you think about these kind of Q&A episodes. Follow me on Twitter at Untitled Car Show. Follow West Coast Correspondent Ryanator122 on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram, all at Untitled Car Show. You can help out the show a lot by just telling a friend about it. The more downloads we get, the more new listeners we're bringing in each week, the better it is for us in terms of trying to get, you know, the advertisers I want on the program, I guess is a good way to put it. And go visit Track Monkey Apparel. Check out the Right Foot Down section. There's great t-shirts with overnight parts from Japan, and there's another great one with Don, was it Toretto's Cafe, and like the tuna sucks here. Go check those out. Those are great. That helps out the show. By supporting Right Foot Down, you're helping support this show. Soon there will be some Untitled Car Show gear up on that site, so keep an eye out for that. And thanks, everyone. Have a good night. Have a good evening, wherever you are, whatever time it is there. Thank you so much for listening. And please, in this crazy mixed up world we got, be safe out there.